Now, I mean, I'm stacking my money trying to find this place. Well, I'm working for Ryder, and I'm delivering some refrigerators. As a matter of fact, Saturday was my last doggone stop. Well, before that, I think I'm moving a little bit too fast. Before that, my grandmother once again had diabetes, and she was trying to cut her toenails, and she went too deep. Because once again, she was losing her sight. And she cut her toenail half off, and it was bleeding so bad she tried to hide it. When we finally found out, the bed was soaked. We took her to the hospital and everything because it bled for maybe a day. And that's how good she hit it. Well, gangrene set in. She really fooled herself. She didn't fool us. She fooled herself. All the things she taught us and was teaching us, she fell a victim of. Took her to the hospital. She had gangrene. They had to cut her leg off all the way up to her knee. Well, I got a new job. My grandmother cut her foot off. She had to get her leg amputated. The only high-profile thing of that whole ordeal was the last house on a Saturday, I was delivering a refrigerator. I moved in and moved the refrigerator in. I met this family. They were the landlord. And I got to sit up there, and I was talking to the kids. They were the same age I was. They were older adults. It was two girls and a guy. And I was making them laugh. It was a nice, nice, beautiful Saturday in Chicago. Sun was out. I think it was 80-something degrees. You hear the kids playing and riding their bike. You know, your sleeves was pulled up. You know, I've been working all day. I think I had 32 stops. I'm sitting up there, and I'm busting my chops, right? And I said, how many apartments you got in this building? It was a two flat. And it was like a home, a big home. I think they had like about four bedrooms. And I said, I'm looking for a place. You know, I just moved in with my grandfather. I said, I was under a little bad luck, but I'm back on my feet. And I said, I'm looking for a place, and this is the type of place I'm looking for. She said, I got a place upstairs. It's vacant. You want to see it? I said, you doggone right. I went upstairs and I looked at the place and it was beautiful. The walls was great. The floor was well conditioned. It was clean. Man, it was just up my alley. Boy, I claimed that place when I first went up there. I claimed it. I saw it. I walked through, man. I was touching the wall. The bathroom smelled so good. See, I'm a bathroom and kitchen man. I love it. I saw that kitchen. It was sparkless and everything, you know? And I told her, I said, you know what? I started telling her about my family and my daughter. And I started telling her I was doing comedy. And they said, you could tell because then I put on a show after that. I think I was there an hour after they showed me the place. And I asked her, I said, could I bring my family come see it? She said, yeah, my mother be home when I tell her about you in the next 30 minutes. Man, I called Rhonda. And I told Rhonda I was at this place and they had a vacant apartment upstairs, and I wanted her and my daughter to come see it. And I said, get ready. I'm going to go drop the truck off, and I'm going to settle in, turn my money in. I'm coming home. And I said, maybe we can come around 6 o'clock. So I did everything I just told y'all. I dropped the truck off, cleaned it out, brought in my stales. What you call stales was the old washer and dryer that you had to bring back. You still got a little bit of money off of it. You know, they kind of recycled it, kind of, sort of. I add up my money. I threw all my stuff in the safe. Supervisor claimed I was clean. I jumped on the bus. I rolled home to my grandfather's house where I was staying. Took a shower. Put me some clothes on because afterwards I was going to take my family to Red Lobster and to the movies. Well, I got there and I met the mother. My wife met everybody else. Went upstairs and she was, oh, Bernard, this is it. This is great. Oh, super. Man, I sat there and I asked the lady, I said, ma'am, is it possible we can have this apartment? She looked at me, she looked at my daughter, and she saw how well my daughter was, you know, conducted herself. She said, you know what? I'm going to help you all out. I love you all to come. That was the most beautiful thing I heard. Oh, now it's a great day. Nice outside Chicago. Got a job. But the flip side of that was my grandmother died. Yep, my grandmother died. I tell you that. I took my wife to Red Lobster and went and saw a movie and the whole 9 yards. And my grandmother got her leg amputated, as I told you earlier. That Monday, Medicare was coming to take her for her rehab. The night before, that Sunday night, my grandmother was hollering at all her kids and grandkids and great-grandkids names in order which they were born. And then she was calling everybody's name who passed. And then all of a sudden she kept hollering my name, Beanie, 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 Beanie. I jumped up, and you know, every night she would do that, I would get up and go downstairs and I would pacify her. Hey, Big Mama, you all right? Yeah, I'm all right. I just want to see your face. I just want to see your face. I said, here I am, here I am. She said, I just want to see your face. I just want to see your face. And I said, look at me. Look at me. I was tired. I had to get up at 5 o'clock. Well, that particular day, I was real tired. You know what? Didn't get up. She kept hollering my name, Beanie. Beanie. I got up. My wife said, you going down? I said, not tonight. I said, I know what she going to say. I said, I just don't feel like it. Well, y'all, I laid back down. I got up that morning, shower, put my uniform on, because, you know, I'm a domestic cat. I can iron better. Can't nobody clean my clothes and iron better than me. My uniform used to lay on me. I got my shirt extra big, and I got my slacks a little extra big to have some room, you know, because, you know. And I walked downstairs and everything. I'm going to eat my breakfast. My grandmother's in a wheelchair, and she had a Tam on. It was Ace Deuce, cocked to the side. And I said, hey, young lady, how you doing? She just looked at me. Well, she really looked through me. Well, right away, I thought she was angry at me because I didn't get up. But that wasn't. She was in her own world. I kissed her on the forehead, and I said, hey, young lady, what's going on? She didn't say nothing. She just nodded, shook her head from side to side. I went in the kitchen, got me a little something, some juice or something. Medicare poured up. And they said, you ready, Miss Mac? You ready? She shrugged her shoulders. They picked her up and then rolled her down the stairs. My aunt and I was at the door looking at her. And they was rolling her to the Medicare van. The van opened and the little stairs came down. And she said, bye, mother. That was my auntie said. I looked at my auntie and I said, you know what? She won't be back. Boy, my auntie almost chewed my head off. Don't be talking like that. Why are you saying that stupid stuff? I said, I'm just telling you. I don't think she's coming back. See, I saw my grandmother different than they saw their own mother and others saw the grandmother. My grandmother was a very wise and spiritual woman, very strong, demanding. She was super independent. When she lost her leg, she lost a part of her independency. My grandmother didn't want nobody taking and huffing over her. My grandmother couldn't cook. She couldn't hardly see. She couldn't be the woman that we all was accustomed to, and I think that really killed her by itself. My grandmother didn't want to be a burden. When they wheeled her out, I saw her life leave. Sure enough, my auntie cursed me out. I overlooked it like I always did. I went my way, went to work, and did my thing. I had about 30-something stops a day. I used to get $5 a stop, no installment fee. And I got through loading my truck off, cleaned it out, did my paperwork, and then I went home. Took the L, got home. Everybody was gone. I walked upstairs. I saw my wife laying in the bed because she used to work midnights on the north side, the nursing home. So I said, hey, baby, I'm home. She looked at me. She said, you heard what happened? I said, no. She said, your grandmother died this afternoon. I just looked at her, and I closed the door. And I went downstairs, I washed my hand, I started preparing dinner, because my wife used to work midnights. Well, I started getting the food out in the whole 9 yards, and that was a deep blow to me. Well, the way she died was something else. After she left with Medicare, they took her. My grandfather, her husband, was with her. And she was sitting there, and she had that same look that she had before she left. And all of a sudden, on the loudspeaker, they said, Lorraine McCullough. Lorraine McCullough. They came with the bed and said, hey, Lorraine, how you doing? She had that look. They said, we're going to lift you up on the bed. They lift her up, one, two, three. They lift her up and put her on the bed, and she rolled over. She was dead. Right after they called her name on the loudspeaker. I guess that was God calling her, because right after she left. And that was the emerge of Bernie Mac and Lorraine McCullough. That was literally my best friend. That was my concierge. Because one thing I can say about that lady, you know, we always tend to really blow our own family horn. But she was more than my family. She told me the truth. That lady never pacified me. She never sat there and co-signed my wrong. She never, ever, ever, man, told me something so I could feel better. She taught me how to move forward and don't look back. She taught me how to stand on my own feet and respect myself and others. She was the man in my life. I never had a man in my life. I had a few coaches after her. It might have been about the end of, you know, my high school and stuff. Wayne Steenley was one. Aaron Stephen was another. Mr. Hill used to teach me how to box. But she was bigger than all of them to me. She was bigger because she was so stand up, and they were too. But I guess it was a little awkward for her coming from a woman, you know? Maybe it was a little strange for me to look at her in that light, especially being your grandmother, because your grandmother's so, you know, if you look at the manuals of grandmothers and grandfathers, they spoil you. They cuddle you. They pamper you. They tell you things to fill your head. They put ice on your wounds. My grandma didn't do none of that. She pushed me out there. She told me to fight. And if I didn't fight, she was going to whoop my ass. Man, I never understood that. That was some hell of a remedy, wasn't it? Beat you for not beating somebody else. But she wouldn't dare let you come in, you know, with your trousers torn or somebody in the family kind of beat down. And that's really how I learned how to really deal with bigger cats. You know, I guess from being beat down from my brother, and my grandmother forcing me to face the music kind of made me have that kind of tiger, that lion mixture in me, you know? I got it. I don't like to show it because when it comes out, I don't know how to stop it. Well, my grandmother left me. I found an apartment. New life started. I was motivated. I was charged up. I wasn't feeling sorry. At her funeral, I could let go because I gave her everything I had. I saw her lying there, but I didn't see her lying there. And I saw all those people hooping and hollering, and a lot of people who never really came even to see and check on my grandmother. That's why it really turned me against funerals. Funerals full of shit. You know, first of all, you're lying there, okay? And all these people coming and huffing and screaming over you. Half of them don't like you. Most of them don't even want to talk to you. When you get through, they're going to be trying to talk to your husband or your wife or your daughter, trying to see what you left them. You know, most of them ain't never been your friend. They talk about you like a dog. Plus, the bottom line, you don't even know they're there. That's why you treat people with love and honor while they're here. Tell them that you miss them, that you were sorry while they're dead. They ain't going to know it. So I'm not a fan of funerals. So at the end of Bernie Mac's ride, that's it. That's all. Show over. You know, if you didn't say what you wanted to say to me while I was here, it don't matter. You know, that's why you try to be and do the best thing you can do right now. I believe that. My grandmother taught me that. Well, Lorraine McCullough was gone. Bernie Mac was coming out. And Bernie Mac got some Lorraine McCullough and Mary McCullough inside him. But that's really my success story today. I moved in at my new apartment. I met Ryder. I got a job at UPS because I got fired from Ryder. Got the apartment. I think 6 months in, working with one of the supervisors. We go on the road, 40 stops. He play hurt, falls down. It was the most case of bad acting. That's how I learned how to act, watching him. It was the most bad case of acting. He played like he hurt his back. Now, how the system went. If you were the driver, you were the boss. You collected the money, you dealt with the CODs, and you did the paperwork. And you got a couple of dollars more. Well, if you were the helper, all you did was most of the manual labor, actually. That's how I could take a refrigerator, wash it, dry it down by myself, cut the bottom of the box, let it slide down off the edge of the truck, put it on the dolly, wrap it up, walking in. I could walk it around to the third floor, because in the city of Chicago, all you have is big buildings and no elevators. Only downtown you get a lot of elevators. Boy, I would lift a refrigerator, bring a refrigerator up by myself and bring it down with no problem. I put a dry washer combined on my back and had the little rope and would carry it up and carry it down. It was a beautiful thing. Well, I could bring him up and down the stairs with no problem, and he knew that. So, of course, he take advantage. That's why I'm a key expert on people when they take advantage of people. I know that's one of my pet peeves when you try to take advantage of me. Now I get an attitude. I truly, truly do. Well, anyway, he fell down like his back got up. I had one end. He had the other end. But this time he set it up all day. I'm lifting, pulling everything by myself. He's playing big shot on campus. This one particular move, we had a refrigerator. We got to take up to the third floor. We get halfway up, all of a sudden he hollers, "Oh, put it down, put it down, put it down." He let it go on me, but by me being an ex-athlete, I jumped on top of the refrigerator and let it slide down so it wouldn't crush me. He stumbles a couple of steps.
"Call the ambulance, call the ambulance."
Of course I go call the ambulance. I see fake all on his face. Ambulance come, and sure enough, they rush him, make it look good. They rush him to the hospital. I bring the refrigerator up by myself because, of course, the customer, she cranking and moaning. "Fuck that, I want my refrigerator. What am I going to do about it? If it's scratched up, look at it, y'all. If it's scratched up, y'all going to give me another one." But it was on the dolly, so the dolly really got the bulk of it. And I was on top of it, so it kind of secured it. She checked it out, examined it and everything. The doors was intact and everything. Plus, if she didn't like it, she could send it back. "Well, I want my refrigerator. My food's spoiling. I took everything out the old one and everything. This is some bullshit. Somebody gonna get killed. I'm not gonna be having this. I've been waiting out for 3 days. Y'all told me y'all was gonna deliver it, and then this bullshit." Well, here I go. Ma'am, calm it down. Hold 9 yards. And I bring the refrigerator up by myself. Boy, she watching. When I got it in, set it up, wiped it off, pulled the old one out, put it on the dolly, now I got to take it down. I guess she was kind of impressed. "Ooh, that was nice. Oh, you want some lemonade? Is this your last stop? Where you live at? Sit down." I said, "No, ma'am, I got to get in. Plus, I got to do this accident report and everything." She said, "Hold on 1 minute. Just be cool." She went and changed clothes. Head on a gown that you can see through, but you can see her public has. I'm sitting there. Okay, here we go. Now she real close to me.
"Ooh, I thought he was bullshitting. I saw him when he fell. He wasn't really hurt. Ooh, you got to take that refrigerator down by yourself. What time you get off? Maybe you can come by. I'm going to cook a nice dinner for you. Are you married? Ooh, your wife cook? Well, you can come down and, come on back and I can fix you some smothered pork chop, mashed potatoes, some corn, and hot butter rolls. You like that? Ooh. Take your shirt off. Take it look like you hot."
I got that refrigerator and put it on my back, and I think I slid down the stairs with that son of a bitch on my neck. I got the hell out of there. I got it on the truck, called in. They knew what happened. I get in, unload the truck, wash it down, get the paperwork that was left in the truck, because by him being the driver, he's responsible. He had everything with him, especially the cash. Well, I told him what happened, made out the report, and they're looking at me, where's the money? I said, well, he got the money. He was the driver. He collected it. Okay, fine. Next day I come in, they say to me, want to talk to you, Bernie. I said, fine. Joe said that you had the cash. He left it in the truck. I said, well, that's not true. I said, because I never had the cash. It's a big envelope. We keep the cash in. You had to put the cash and the receipt attached to the cash. I said, well, I never even had that envelope. So we can't let you work today until we get that cash and get down to the bulk of what's going on. Because Joe said that he let you drive a little bit, which was a down face, excuse my French, motherfucking lie. I go to the hospital. I'm hot. I go to the hospital. I go to his room, and I didn't even get a pass. I'm walking down the hall. I'm looking, and his family in there, Italian guy, you know, they all in there. And I said, hey, Joe, how you feeling? I'm all right, man. Oh, man, I'm all right, man. Ooh. I said, Joe, you know, now that you're all right, I want to ask you something. I said, man, the supervisor said that you said that I have that money. That's not true. And I'd like you to call them while I'm standing here and explain to them what happened. Because you know what, ladies and gentlemen? That job was very dear to me. It was some hard work, but I needed that job. I did not want to go back home without that job and my wife covering for me again. Besides being on aid, that was the most belittling thing I could ever have in my life, my wife taking care of me. So I had to sacrifice busting my back, then going home and having my wife take care of me again. So I told Joe, I want you to do this. He said, I'm going to take care. Plus, he was a union stewardess. He said, I'm going to take care of it. Don't you worry about it. I said, but I am worried about it. Because I couldn't work today. He said, man, trust me, man. Trust me. It's going to be all right. I go back to the job, and I told them I just came from the hospital, and I spoke to Joe. They told me, well, that's not what Joe told us just a minute ago. He said, I came to the hospital, and I threatened to whoop his ass if he didn't split the money with me. They made me take a polygraph test. I took it. I passed. They told me I was a good liar. They told me because there was so much controversy that they could not allow me to work there again, turning my uniform. I looked them in the face and I told them I didn't do it. I think the guy who hired me, I think he believed me, but there was nothing he can do. I said, okay. I got up. I stood straight up. And I told them, thank you very much for the opportunity. I turned in everything. They had a key that you only can unlock the tools and when you installed so they wouldn't steal it. You know, people steal everything, you know. I gave them my key. I walked home. It was the longest walk I had. I got home. My wife worked midnights. I told her I was fired. She said, oh, my God. Here we go again. I said, well, I found another job. 2 days later, UPS, driving a truck, delivery man. I went in there, interview. Of course, once again, ladies and gentlemen, I killed. There wasn't an interview that I could not go in there and walk out a happy man. I guess I had a calling. They called it gift for gaff. But you know something about having the gift of gab? I wasn't an abuser. I never abused it, and I never lied. It came out by itself. I'm proud of that, too. I really am. I learned that from Lorraine McCullough and Mary McCullough never take advantage of, always appreciating and never abuse. I'm glad they taught me that. Anyway, I go in the interview. I come out 2 days later. My wife face a little grim. I say, I got another job. She said, man, you know you get a job. I said, yeah, you know, I get a job. I got a job at UPS. The first day I go to training, I go to school. It teaches about driving, unloading, doing the invoice, how to keep your paperwork up, what you do with CODs again. Boy, I had a nightmare about COD. I did not want to deal with no money. Well, I had a daughter. I had a wife. I'm in the clubs, 12 shows. I work Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. You know, $6, $8. If I didn't do a party, $25, $35 here. I stopped doing the parks because I felt like I was a bum. I felt like I was begging. I wanted to be legit. Plus, my priorities was in the way, so I had to make a lot of shuffling, you know what I mean? Well, I got a job, UPS, a whole 2 weeks of school, uniform once again, brown shoes, I could polish, and, oh, I was looking good, right? First day in training with the supervisor, name was Blackman. Cussed me out. Black motherfucker, step on the gas. Try this song, bitch. Man, get that out. Let's hustle. Man, it's like you're in the military. You get up there first thing in the morning, you get in line. Like the lieutenant talking to you, telling you what your job like first day, second day, how we gonna deal this, how we got that. It was a Thanksgiving holidays. So I'm sitting up there working with the supervisor. He cussing me out, calling me black motherfucker and some bitch and hurry up. I'm sitting there, but here I go again, y'all. My daughter and my wife. Damn. Did not want my wife to take care of me, and I did not want to lose this apartment. So I bit it. At the end of the day, once again, 30-something stopped, 40-something stopped. But let me explain something to you, how God worked. He put me a writer. I had the same format, so I was semi-conditioned. Had I not been conditioned, you know, because I was dealing with refrigerators, sofas, and washers and dryers, a lot of more heavier objects than when I was dealing with UPS, it was still the same hustle because you got to get done. So I was conditioned. It was almost like he put me in training. At the end of the day, we stop at a place, hamburger place, and we sit down and we're going over the paperwork and you're showing me how to put it in order and how to deal with what first and what's quicker and what to worry about last. And he was doing this, and this how you do this, and this how you do that. Now I'm looking at this guy. I'm looking at him straight ahead. He just got through calling me a bunch of motherfuckers and some bitches and cocksuckers. Now I'm at the end of the day, so I'm damn near off. So he looks at me and he said, are you paying attention to what I'm telling you? And I looked at him. I said, don't you ever talk to me like that again. The next time you talk to me like that, we'll have a misunderstanding. Now, I don't know what works with somebody else, but I don't need that type of motivation. Whatever you need from you being my superior, I'd be more than happy to do. That was the respect that I was always taught. But then the flip side, Lorraine McCullough told me, was always respect yourself. And then something else came into play that Big Mama and my mother always taught me. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. I didn't say it in a way that I was over the top, but I said it in a way where I want him to know I meant it. He looked at me. But I guess my eyes didn't lie. And he told me. He said, son, you're a good guy. I'm just doing my job. And he said, by no means this is personal. And this is the way I was taught. And this is the way that I only know how to teach. And he said, you're right. I have to learn how to deal with individuals. And he said, I'm sorry. And I said, me too. Then we broke it down, and he showed me in. I always catch on quick. I got in the next day, my second day. He He looked at me. He said, I got some bad news, man. Emergency happened and I can't go out with you and somebody didn't show. He said, you think you can handle the route? I said, what? By myself? He said, yeah. Well, Lorraine McCullough came back to me again, along with my mother, Mary McCullough. They always told me, don't let your left hand know what your right hand doing. So I don't think he knew that I came from Ryder, that I had somewhat experience. I played dumb. I knew I could handle it. I had packages versus appliances, so I think I had the upper edge. Well, second day, the only thing that was really messed up, kind of tight, was this was my second day, man. And you threw me out there with the wolves. I didn't like that, you know? Well, I got out there, and here I go, COD and all this money and stuff, Thanksgiving holiday. And I had a COD in the projects of Chicago on 37th, right off Cottage Grove. Now, I know this is bullshit when I read the invoice. $1,700? COD? Man, that stick-up move. I said, okay, so I called in. I said, hey, man, I got a COD, Blackman, man, for $1,700. I said, I don't think that's happening up where I am right now. He said, well, look, just go up in there, check it out, see what's happening, and if it ain't, because they're all about get that money. If you get killed, that's all right, po thing. They get somebody else. People need jobs. I go up in the projects, elevator ain't working. I think I'm on the 9th floor or something like that. Hallway smell like pure D piss. Shit, piss, wine, vomit, burnt needles, a whole 9 yards. I'm walking up the stairs, okay? I get there, man, I knock on the door. Who is it? I said, UPS, ma'am. Who? UPS. I did not want to say what I was there for. The last thing you want to do is make an announcement of COD in the project of $1,700. She said, what you want? I said, I have a package for you. I ain't ordering no goddamn package. I said, I think you might be interested in this one, ma'am. They cracked the door and they looked at me. What is it? Wait, I don't see no package in your hand. I said, ma'am, you have a package downstairs, but before I bring it up, I said, can I come in? Yeah, let the motherfucker in. Let the motherfucker in. See what the motherfucker wants. Motherfucker, you better want something. I'm telling you right, motherfucker, nah. That's how she talks to me. I said, okay. I said, ma'am, you have a COD for $1,700. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, you can bring them up. Some ceiling fan. I think I had about 6 of them. I took a couple of steps towards the door, and one of the ladies inside the house, she said, mister, that's your truck? I said, yes, ma'am. So they're breaking in it. Now, the way the project was set up, the window that she was looking out of was in the back in a sharp corner. Now, I'm hesitant to go back there. I don't know where I am. COD, if it's a setup move once again. Okay? I said, uh-oh. So I let my instincts kick in. I'm watching the lady in front of me, because although she was a lady, I was going to knock the shit out of her. I clef, oh Lord. I might have been dead, but she'd have been retarded for the rest of her goddamn life. And I'm watching the lady who told me to come to the door, and I'm waiting on somebody to pop out these closets, if that was going to be. They tearing my truck up. I glance at the window, and I keep my eye on them. She said, you're going down there and stop them? I said, no, let them finish. Let them finish. Ain't nothing I can do right now. I let them get through. I finally went down there. I had a few packages left. I locked the truck up as best I could. The door kind of hanging off. I got out of there. After I got the door a little secure, I bumped on out of there with the quickness. Well, no windows and glass, bro. They just tore the door. They tore the door off. I got to a phone. I called in. I told them, I said, hey, Blackman, they broke in. What they getting? I said, they damn near got everything, man. He said, wow, you all right? I said, yeah, I'm okay. I said, but you know what? I really feel kind of funny you all sending me out here, man. And, you know, my first day by myself, man. He said, how much package you got? I said, I got about 10 or 15 left. Deliver them and come on in. Did they break the safe? I said, they tried, but they couldn't get in the safe. He said, hurry up and finish that, man, and come on in. I started laughing. I said, okay. I finished, because I followed instructions pretty good, you know. I was taught. In order to be a good leader, you got to be able to take instructions. My mother and my grandmother told me that. Well, I come in and everything, and here we go again. They put me through the third degree. Same drill, I went through it right up. Trying to see if I set it up. Polygraph tests, we go. I passed, of course, but the eyebrows were still up. Well, I was kind of nervous. The holiday was going, got through Thanksgiving. I'm running around by myself. I got wind of another job on the west side of Chicago. UIC. I went there, filled the application, called me right away for an interview, and here we go again. I passed the interview with flying colors. I had that place laughing so hard, man, I'm telling you. They started to give me the supervisor job. No shit. I used to work with my grandfather. He taught me how to clean at General Motors. I was a janitor. He taught me how to buff. He taught me how to do corners. He taught me how to dust. He taught me I could clean. I got two jobs. I'm working UPS from 7 to get off maybe 4, 5 o'clock, sometimes 7. I get home, eat a little something, go to bed. I work from 10:30 to 6:30. So I had a half an hour to get to UPS. Take my uniform, Chris, hang it up, put my uniform, my janitorial uniform on. I'm working two jobs. And the luxury about both of them, I had Saturday and Sunday off. I did comedy on Saturday and Sunday. Now, I'm getting hot now. I'm doing parties, and I'm starting my own thing. Well, time went by. Here I go. I go to work, UPS, that morning. We line up, and they say, you know what? We got some bad news. It's your last day. Want you to finish up, put your uniforms and blah, they in the little trunk and your route book, whole 9 yards, and we're sorry to tell you that you all are dismissed. But you can finish the whole day out. I had 47 stops. I got off at 7:30, 8 o'clock. I got home about 8:20. I went to bed. My wife had dinner for me. I got up, showered. Hey, little dinner, my buddy came and picked me up at 10 o'clock, big nigga, because he worked down the street at the hospital, Presbyterian, St. Luke. Dropped me off, I get there, go to my floor, the supervisor came up and said, they cut back, today your last day. I lost two jobs in the same damn day. Wow. You can clean up, clean your floor. We got inspectors coming, but we want it real nice. Everybody else in the building was, fuck that. They fired us, still wants to clean up. They was drinking and smoking, but you know, here I go. I clean my whole floor up, sparklers. Because you know why? I had a little wishful thinking going on in my head. If I kept doing a good job, then maybe they'd bring me back. Big mama, my mama taught me that. You never know what tomorrow brings. Well, here I go, did my thing. That morning was a sad day. Everybody was crying. I said, what the heck am I going to do? I got home. I worked midnight, got off 7 o'clock that Saturday morning. It went down the street, man, Roosevelt Road. I had a little club down there, a little lounge, went drinking. I never did go before, but I did that day. Went down and had me a few beers, 7:30 in the morning. That was a little awkward for me. But that was my night, getting off at 7 o'clock in the morning. Boy, I leave that place, man, at 2 o'clock. Bullet. Fool. Blasted. Big nigga drive me home. He said, man, don't worry about it. I get home, my wife and my daughter gone. My daughter and my wife, they got up bright and early. We always did something. But by me working two jobs, I couldn't join them. I wasn't joining them that evening, but I had me two shows. Two shows lined up Saturday night. Got home around 2:30, 3 o'clock. Showered, ate me a little something, went to bed. Woke up, man, show at 10:30, woke up around 8, got myself together, my wife and daughter coming in, told her what happened. Oh, shit. Here we go. Looking at me like I'm crazy. What we gonna do now? Here we go. Now, I had two shows that night, my wife looking at me, doing the wife thing on me. You know what I'm saying? I be damned. I don't need to hear this. Then my daughter came to me and told me she needs something for a field trip this Tuesday coming up. I'm sitting up there, man, what the fuck? Well, big nigga come get me. My buddy. He asked me what Rhonda said. I said, you know what she said, man. Shit, you know what the hell she said. He said, what you gonna do? I said, I don't know, man, but I'm gonna do something. I had two shows. You know what I did? I told him what I just told you. But the way I told it, it was hysterical. I did 2 hours that night. I got paid $125. I went to the second show, and I told him a little bit about what I did the first show. But I did 2 hours, and I think I was emotionally drained from telling. I didn't have the same juices going, you know? I did 1 hour 45 minutes, but I did another routine about never working for nobody again and how you could tell you fired. And I got a standing ovation down there. I got $150. That's $275. Plus, I got my paychecks 2 weeks from UPS, and I got 3 weeks from the other job. I had them all stacked up, and I was saving my money. Boy, I got home. I said, I be dog. My landlord rang the phone, and she said, I need to talk to you to come downstairs. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, I'm not going to take your rent for this month because I'm going to ask you all to leave. I said, what? She said, my daughters are down here and the lifestyle's getting a little bit too hectic and I can't have them staying. I'm going to get them to upstairs. She said, Mr. Mack, I hate to do it, but they're my daughters. And our family is falling apart. That's what she told me. Her name is Miss Rivers. Damn! She said, I'm going to give you 6 months to find something else. That was real nice of her. I said, I don't have to pay rent for 6 months. She said, no, I'm going to use your security. Because I had to pay 3 months security and 1 month's rent. So she said she'd use that. Wow, so that gave me about $500 with the rent I gave her. She gave me half of it back in the event I found my place in before time. So that gave me something to work with. I went upstairs, okay, and I told my wife. She did the wife thing. Wow. I'm looking for a place. I'm doing comedy. I hear on the radio that the Cotton Club is bumping on Mondays. Cotton Club have singing, dancing, and comedy. That's okay. I called down there, and they told me, hey, you had to come down and sign up. Over the phone was not necessary. And you had to be there X amount of time. Now, I'm looking for a place. I like that Monday. I'm not working. Okay? I'm busting my ass looking for work. Right? And I'm sitting up there trying to find how to get at the Cotton Club. Well, I had a buddy. His name was Ron. He used to run Doc's Fish in Chicago. It was a franchise, Doc's, D-O-C-K-S. And he was a big wig there. I called him. I said, man, anything you can get me, man, be appreciated, man, anything. He said, we got a cook thing going, man. He said, but we got the Taste of Chicago. I haven't worked the Taste of Chicago, see how you fit in. And I never cooked before. They trained me on the job. I got down there, and I'm going to tell you something, $3.25 an hour. Let me tell you something. That was harder than UPS. That was harder than General Motors. That was harder than Ryder. That was the hardest job I've ever had in my life. And I had an asshole supervisor. He didn't like Ron Lee, and Ron Lee and I was play cousins, so he didn't like me. I mean, he tried to make me do everything that was not necessary because he couldn't stand Ron. Well, my motto was, you ain't gonna break me, I'm gonna break you. You can't enter me. Lorraine McCall and Mary McCall taught me that. Here I go, Taste of Chicago. I mean, there's millions of people down there. It was constant, constant. I've got all these buckets of fish. I'm sitting up there, and I'm throwing fish down. I got it down pat. Right hand throwing in, left hand cover. Put it on the pan. It's like a machine going on, man. Your arm's so strong, man, when you get through messing around, man. I'm telling you, they like me. Ron Lee came and got me, man. He said, Bernie, he said, I want you to go out in the front. Go out in front of our little booth and try to get the people to come and eat our fish. Because there was another fish fry place right across the street. And the guy was hollering, hey, come get our fish, and we do this, that, and other. And they was like, man, they going over there. I said, man, we need somebody to go out there. And Ron came to me. He knew I was a comedian. He knew I was a party. He knew I was a class clown. He knew all of that. He grew up with me. He said, Bernie, man, come on, man, do something. Put something together real quick. I said, okay. I stood in front of Doc's booth, and I just started telling jokes. I had so many people around me, y'all, I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. I started telling them why you should eat Doc's, why I want y'all to eat it, but I don't eat it. They thought that was the funniest shit. You don't eat it? Hell no, I don't eat it. You know, I just started talking about it, you know, the fish from Argentina. And I had so many people, and then, I'm telling you, no exaggeration, it was a line with over thousands of people. Then they had to pull me back because all of a sudden I was real quick cooking fish. And I just started. And I'm talking shit while I'm cooking. They love that. Then the next day, I got a reputation. They said the black guy that be cooking, man, he fun. And I started doing it for the whole week of Taste Chicago. Well, the big wigs, the owners came down. They was truly impressed. And they said, man, you want a job? Man, you got it. Well, I was still cooking on 325. Started on 35th and Wabash. Supervisor didn't like me. Beat my balls. He really didn't like me now. He didn't like me because they liked me. Oh, he tried to break me, but he couldn't. I went through there, y'all. I kept doing it, and I was doing comedy. Now, this is the catch. He got pissed off that I was doing comedy because I was telling you the story about how I went to the Cotton Club. I went to the Cotton Club and I signed up and I got this new job at Doc's. Now, I'm able to pay the light and the gas and I'm buying some groceries. I couldn't pay the rent. My wife had to go back and start paying the rent. I found a place on 107th and King Drive. Oh, I can find a place. I found it in the due date that Miss Rivers gave us. I moved my stuff, man. I kept the place in mint condition. And I sat there, man, got a job at Doc's Fish at 325. Now, here come the Cotton Club. I went down to the Cotton Club and I met Jimmy Spinks from Car Wash. Big fat guy that was on a little scooter. Jimmy Spinks was running open mic. Now, you don't get paid. I signed up and he said, you're a comedian. I said, yes, sir. Now, I done worked all the clubs, been at the clubs, and amateur night. I was amateur night at all the clubs for about 4 years. Then I went to opening act. Then from opening act, I went to MC. Then I started, man, I'm talking about 6, 7 years and went past. Starting from 77. Then I stopped in 82, 83. You know, crisis came in. I came back in 83, then 83. I worked all the way up, got Doc's at 85. I started really killing them then a little bit. About 10 years in the game. About maybe 8, 9 years in the game. I'm at the Cotton Club. He gives me the rules. You got 5 minutes. You can't do this. You can't insult the audience. You can't do it. God bless it. Can't talk about the people and this, that, and another. I went up 5 minutes and I killed. Maybe about 25, 30 people in there. I mean, they wailing. He pulled me to the side and he said, man, you want to come back? I said, yes, sir. He said, ladies and gentlemen, Bernie Mac, he is good. And I sat there and I went to work at Doc's Fish that morning. I was off on Mondays and Thursdays. And I didn't mind because I started building my comedy thing back up. I was working all the comedy clubs again, Wackos, Comedy Room, Catch a Rising Star, Comedy College, Last Laugh. I was doing every comedy club. Now I'm getting my momentum and I'm getting paid for it. I'm going to move myself up to a feature act now. And then sometime I MC, host, wherever they called me, they put me, I went. No problem. Always had respect. I was taught that. Lorraine McCullough, Mary McCullough taught me how to always respect. Well, now I'm doing the clubs and everything. I'm getting reputation. People coming in, Doc Fish, you know, coming from the Taste. Hey, I know you. You're the guy that was at the Taste. Man, didn't I see you at Wackos? Didn't I see you? I said, yeah, yeah. Oh, that didn't sit well with old Graham. That didn't sit well with him at all. Then he started tampering with my days. He got wham that I was doing the Cotton Club on Monday nights. He switched me to Monday nights. He knew that meant a lot to me. Well, before that, I went on the next week. Jimmy Springs asked me back. I got hot. Came back again. 2 months went by. 3 months went by. And they came to me. Now, mind you, I never got paid. It was open mic night. Never got paid. 3 months went by, and I was becoming a Cotton Club name. Went from 25 people to maybe 30, 35, maybe 60. Start building. People start coming to see me. They was asking about me. Then this lady, Carolyn Albritton, came to me and said, you know, she want to give me my own night. Let me MC it. Well, I had MC experience. You know, I was always hosting and doing all that kind of stuff. From the Burning Spear, being with my brothers and High Chef around and, you know, doing the parks and doing the ales. I've been my own man for a while. I took that opportunity and I took it to the doggone roof. It went from 60 people to 100-something people. I got paid maybe twice. First time I got paid was $25, $30. Second time they paid me and they said, well, we can't pay you anymore because we have to pay the band. I told them, quote, that's okay. It was an honor. I was working my chops. I was getting paid with the mic. That was the biggest pay I could have ever gotten. I started taking the Cotton Club where they had to open up the back. We had great people like Phyllis Hyman, Al Jarreau, R. Kelly, Dale Givens, George Wilborn. All those local individuals started coming down there. Terrence Kane. The next thing you know, Jordan and them started asking about me. Every athlete that was in town stayed to come see me. Well, Graham got wham of that, and he changed my nights. I went to the owners and I told them, I said, well, you know, I'm doing comedy on Monday nights and I work anything you all want to put me. I said, but I even work Sunday nights because Sunday nights you close at 11. I was right on 35th. I get out of there at 11:30. I get down to a couple of clubs down there. I worked at 2 o'clock. So it was cool. The crowds didn't come in until around 12. So that was great. Well, they moved me back to my Mondays. That didn't sit well with him. So he fired me. Came in one day. He said I had to, how you put it? Workers started believing in me. I was too strong. I guess he was calling me Jesus. You know how they did Jesus? They went to see him. He was talking to the people. And they asked him, what was he talking about? And they said he was talking about love and peace. He said, well, bring him in. Bring him in. He said, but he didn't do nothing. He said, yeah, but if he decided to do something, they'll follow him. So I guess that was his way of thinking. I wasn't thinking about him. Man, I was thinking about getting myself together, being a comedian, because all of a sudden I saw the light. I saw the light so bright, y'all, it was unbelievable. Damn near blind me. I could taste it. I was coming into my own. My material was popping off my tongue and off my head like out of nowhere. Before, I was indecisive about my comedy because I didn't know who I had to be because everybody kept telling me I had to be who was ever hot. All of a sudden, y'all, I was coming into Bernie Mac, and Bernie Mac was popping like Redenbacher. This cat fired me. 2 days later, man, I put together a piece of work and I went in front of the owners and we discussed it and I blew him out the water. He didn't know who he was fucking with. The truth ran off my tongue, man, like I had a serum. All the lies, man, that he was throwing. See, it don't matter if you stick to the truth because it comes off so easy. I blew him away. They transferred me from 35th in Wabash to 79th in Western. I damn near ran that crew because they always knew they could depend on me. I asked them, I said, you know what? Can you give me whatever night you all give me? I said, let me tell you, because I could tell the club owners and they'll work me around it. Well, they gave me Thursday and Sundays. Thursday was cool. Because, hey, that was right after Friday. When I got off Friday, I went down to the club when I got off smelling just like pussy. Excuse me, I mean fish. Next thing you know, I started getting a name. People started coming in the stores looking for me. Because I had the whole crew laughing. It was a happy crew. Work was fun. I got up to $4 an hour. All at the Cotton Club, I was building a name for me. On Monday night, when I got to the Cotton Club, I built a whole trend of work for me. Boy, the phone was jumping off the hook. Saturday, they moved me to Saturday night off. That was the best thing they could have did, so I had Thursday and Saturday now. Saturday, I had 7 shows. I go to 1 show, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9:30, 10:15, 11. Last show, I was doing pajama parties. People was asking for me. I was making $700 to $1,000 a week. That was nice money. That was just on the side. I was making $425. I was legit. I could depend on that. That was my daughter's money. Next thing you know, y'all, here I go. They liked me so much, the people respected me so much, they made me manager. I went to $525 every 2 weeks. I was running a shift. I told him once again, it didn't matter where you put me because I can deal with the schedule. The clubs worked around me. I worked Monday morning, got off at 5, went home, showered and everything, 8. Got to the Cotton Club, 8 o'clock, and I ran it. Left the Cotton Club at maybe 2, 3 in the morning, went and had breakfast. Got home, man, had maybe 2, 3 hours of sleep. I worked Tuesday night sometime. Well, I moved from Tuesday morning to Tuesday night. So that was cool. 5 o'clock. Got off 12 o'clock. Run down to the club, see what was happening. Kept my ear close to the ground. Seeing the comics come in, watching them work. Wednesday, I worked Wednesday night. Thursday, I was off. Oh, and I tore the town up. I was at 4 or 5 comedy clubs, comedy rooms. Wackos, I've slid in at Excalibur. You know, I was all over. Friday, I worked Friday night, the big night, because I had to cook. No problem. Get off at 2 o'clock, still go downtown. Stick my head in some of the clubs. Saturday, I was off. Uh-oh. 7 clubs. 7 shows. Start building a real big name for myself. Next thing you know, I made a decision. About 1988, I'm really hot. 88, 89. I told Docs I was leaving. I couldn't deal with it. They said, okay. They tried to talk me out, and I let them. I went and I told Rhonda that what I was thinking about, and here she goes. She did the wife on me. No, I mean, come. I mean, you're doing okay. We got a kid. We got this. I went through all of that. Damn. My cousin was working for Wonder Bread. I'm telling him, he said, man, we need another driver. I said, wow, man, that sure was. How much they pay, man? He said, man, well, you get paid every week at like $600-$700 every week. Wow, that was great. Plus insurance. I went to the truck thing again. Delivering truck from store to store. Now, I came from Ryder. I came from UPS, so I had to jump on it. I was not inexperienced with this. I moved on, man. I went down there and got an interview, and here we go again, y'all. Ta-da! Standing ovation. I'm the Mac man now. Here come the Mac. I ain't coming, man, fill the room. I don't care if it was a funeral. I was knocking them out by the way I did do funerals.